You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Welcome, one and all. We took a brief week's hiatus, and I took the time to watch a few documentaries, catch up on a few episodes of Family Guy, and lay in the sun, and I feel nice and refreshed. But you know what was interesting about taking time off from fighting the New World Order? Is you kind of get a little bit bored. You know, messing with this scum day in, day out is what keeps my heart beating. And when I decided to come on back, it just made me so happy and happy and happy. Now, while I was gone, on the other hand, some ridiculously nasty stuff has been happening, of course. And it just shows the fact that the enemy never sleeps. For example, John Key, our Prime Minister, has met up with the UN Secretary General about the Asian summit, and most likely to help integrate New Zealand into the fold of the UN-loving New World Order scumbag filthmongers, and to discuss the possible future appointment of our former Prime Minister, Helen Clark, to be the next UN Secretary General. She's currently number three in the UN, and my friend John Eisen from uncensored.co.nz, a supporter of this show, has had a gentleman's bet for quite some time that precisely that is going to happen. We also had the mother of all corruption and evil set foot on our dainty Lord of the Rings soil. Old, what's her name? Hillary Clinton. You know, visiting us from another world of ridiculously copious corruption. God knows what the heck she's doing here. Signing on a free trade deal, you know, the New Zealand equivalent of NAFTA and GATT, to make the sucking sound of jobs out of our country just so freaking fabulous for the New World Order. I can't wait. And also, the Federal Reserve is holding a conference on Jekyll Island to celebrate 100 years of dominating America. Isn't that probably blimmin' nice of them? Right back to where it all began. You know, it's just funny about criminals. What they say is that they always return to the scene of the crime. And speaking of scene of the crime, we're going to have some new legislation passed here soon, I'm very sure, called the Search and Surveillance Bill. One of the clauses of which has been commented by a award-winning journalist in New Zealand, saying that it will hogtie investigative journalism because it will give the government the ability to make sure, and indeed force, journalists to reveal their sources. One of the great things that you do when you want to have a free media is you allow people to contribute anonymously. Government doesn't want that anymore. You're going to be screwed. And it's just going to force journalists to basically be the bad guys and be secretive about where they get their information from. So, you know, doesn't matter what law they pass, they're still going to get screwed over by journalists anyway. And also, last but not least, DNA barcoding aims to protect species. This is on the TVNZ site. Yeah, straight out of Agenda 21. They want to have DNA barcoding on every single animal on Earth just to protect them. And I wonder what time they're going to choose to make sure that all the human beings are catalogued and barcoded too. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will, and we'll be right back. Please don't desert me. Look at me, driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations. I'll let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations. Have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command because I can guide a missile by satellite. By satellite. By satellite. And I can hit a target through a telescope. Through a telescope. Through a telescope. I can end the planet in the Holocaust because I'm Barack H.O. Barry. Welcome, Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. Check out our great website, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. A somewhat fabulous producer, Mitch, has been working overtime on that puppy there to make sure that you've got some decent info and some good archives to listen to. Isn't that nice? Now, we have, it is my great honour, I must say, to introduce to you, the listeners, Lauren Moray. Now, she's an expert witness at the International Criminal Tribunal for Afghanistan at Tokyo. She's an independent scientist and international expert on radiation and public health issues. She's on the organizing committee of the World Health Committee on Radiation Risk, an organization of independent radiation specialists, including members of the Radiation Committee in the EU Parliament. All right, she's been environmental commissioner for the city of Berkeley, and on and on and on it goes. Incredible information that you're about to be exposed to, and if you're not prepared to have your perception of reality shattered, I'd suggest you turn it down just a little bit, because apparently the impact won't be as bad. Lauren Moray, I would like to welcome you to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Well.
Hi, thank you. And the only reason I agreed to do the program today is because they said we'd have lots of fun and use lots of humor.
Well, you know, it's my motto, if you lose your sense of humor when you're talking about all this stuff, you'll go friggin' nuts.
Well, that's exactly right, and I could never sustain myself talking about this horrible topic and the implications and the impact on the environment and the global population without smiling and just walking people through it without being afraid. And I use humor just like you do, and I smile, and sometimes people get mad at me for smiling because they say it's such a horrible topic. But I said if I was acting crazy like people should be when they find out what is really happening to them, then no one would listen to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We should be acting crazy, but we're not, because it's just
because it's, I guess it's the old comedy and tragedy. It's both.
Yeah, yeah. I watched a documentary over the last week about three scientists, one who came up with the atomic theory, one who came up with infinity theory, and another guy who built the Enigma machine, you know, that cracked the code.
Oh.
And all three of these scientists were ridiculed by their general community, and as a result, they became somewhat reclusive. As they became reclusive, they began to obsess on the problems and the scientific mantra that they were dealing with, mm-hmm. and then they lost context with the rest of their lives, and they gradually grow insane. As I was watching this, I thought to myself, "Ooh, that's me."
Yeah.
And so many other truthers, eh? I mean, and this is the thing. If you lose context of your life and everything, if you focus only on the bad and forget all the things that are funny and fabulous, like life in general,
mm-hmm.
you know, what's going to happen to you? You are going to go friggin' nuts, aren't you?
Yeah, because of the detachment and isolation and alienation. And so I talk to people like they're my friends or they're my sister or family or neighbor. And it's not because I want to frighten them. It's because I want them to know what's really happening to them and empower them to do their own research and to figure out what actions they can take. And so I put the information out there and I let go of it. I just want them to have the scientifically correct information and the facts. And you cannot believe what people do with it. It's incredible.
Now, you're an expert on radiation. How did this become one of your chosen fields of study?
My addiction. It's not an addiction. I'm a geoscientist, And so I studied the earth and earth processes. And when I was invited to Hiroshima and Nagasaki in the year 2000, I really knew nothing about radiation, and very little, even though I had worked in two nuclear weapons labs, the Lawrence Berkeley Lab and the Lawrence Livermore Lab. And I didn't have any classification. I'm a Quaker. I would never work on weapons or anything like that. I'm a pacifist. And but I needed a job, and I got one at the Lawrence Livermore Lab in 1989, actually, and I was working on the Superfund project, which was to clean up the chemical contamination. They never told me there was radioactive contamination, and I certainly didn't know the biological effects. But they just dumped their experiments, all this radiation, into evaporation ponds all over the Livermore lab, and then they'd roll up the tarp and bury it. And when I discovered this, and also that like 8 people died in 3 years of cancer, and I'd never known anyone in my whole life who died of cancer. So I finally became a whistleblower in 1991 at Livermore, and I still didn't know anything about radiation until I came back from Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And every politician, before they become president or prime minister or king or whatever, should be mandatory that they visit the Hiroshima and Nagasaki ceremonies that are held in August every year. And they must visit the peace museums where the horror of those bombs dropped on human populations is presented in such a moving and such a dignified and such a real way. The Japanese have done a magnificent job keeping the issue of live bombing human populations with nuclear weapons alive, and taking that country to country since 1945. And the hardest thing, the very hardest thing, was when I met the survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki in their cities during the ceremonies and the visits to the peace museums. And I touched their scars, and I touched their bones, and I touched the places that had healed from that radiation exposure. And I felt so guilty. I felt so terrible because I was a scientist, and it was the scientists who made that possible. Actually, it was the engineers. And I just decided in two moments. One was in the Hiroshima Museum when I saw the dummy of little boy, the bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima, and then when I was in the Nagasaki Museum and I saw a photograph just within an hour of the nuclear bomb dropped on Nagasaki, and a Japanese young mother was standing with her kimono open, and she was nursing her baby with damage from the bomb on the baby, and it was a dying baby. And I said, that could have been me. That could be any mother anywhere in the world, and I'm going to spend the rest of my life working on this issue.
As you do. My thoughts are that as soon as you come across this very serious issue and something that is of great importance to, well, not just yourself, but many more than just yourself, if you choose to do nothing, then you're culpable, as far as I'm concerned. We've got a problem in this society, don't we, where people don't take responsibility.
That's right.
And take Truman, for example. When the order was tossed over his desk to nuke Hiroshima and Nagasaki, what did he consider it for? Something like I heard he considered it for about maybe 30 minutes before he decided to nuke Japan. And this was after the fact that Japan had tried to surrender to the United States several times.
They started in March or April of 1945. Through the Swiss, and the U.S. would not accept the surrender because they hadn't finished making the bombs.
Yeah, we haven't got our nukes ready yet, boy. Okay,
yeah.
We'll surrender when we tell you when to surrender.
And the Japanese continued trying to surrender. And what I discovered, I've been on 20 speaking tours to Japan, and I always have questions and answers afterwards. And the Japanese have told me so much that you would never be able to find out. But what I discovered is that Christianity, which has always opposed usury, which is money lending and charging interest, in fact, until the 1700s, all Christians were prohibited from being in money lending or banking. And because of that tradition, the London bankers, and that is the Rothschilds and the even older names behind them, were terrified because Christianity was spreading like wildfire all over Asia, and they did not want Asia to be a Christian continent. So when General Groves, who was the head of the Manhattan Project, walked into the War Department office, Colonel Henry Stimson had been Secretary of War in World War I, and he was Secretary of War in World War II. And Stimson, who was a Wall Street banker with ties to the Rothschilds and the City of London bankers, Stimson said, "Have you figured out the targets yet?" And Groves had the list of the targets in his hand, but didn't want to show them to Colonel Stimson, the Secretary of War, because he hadn't even shown his own boss. And Groves said, yes. And Stimson demanded that Groves hand over the list, and Stimson announced at that moment, "I am picking the targets. I am deciding where the bombs will be dropped. I am the only one making that decision. That's my decision, and I'm taking over, and you're going to do what I tell you to do." So the two biggest Christian populations in Japan, and this is hidden Christians who had converted in the 1600s, at the time the Portuguese Jesuits were working, had visited Japan. They had secretly been Christians for 400 years. Can you imagine? And so Stimson picked Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the two largest Christian populations in Japan. And in the pilot who was flying the Nagasaki bombing mission had, as his co-pilot, a passenger. He didn't have a co-pilot with him. He had a passenger. And the passenger was a Lithuanian Jew who was very good friends with a lot of the Jewish scientists who worked on the Manhattan Project. And he was also General Groves' top reporter at the New York Times, who wrote any propaganda story that Groves wanted him to write about the bomb and World War II and so forth and so on. And he was sitting in the top secret mission of that whole war, other than the Hiroshima mission. And the pilot flew 5 miles off course so that he could drop the second bomb on the Urukami Cathedral, a Jesuit cathedral in Nagasaki. And years later, I mean, probably in the middle 2000s, maybe 2003, I visited Nagasaki. I've been twice to the ceremonies in August. And I was walking around the cathedral. There's no roof, and many of the statues have been destroyed. It's a very large structure. And grass was growing, you know, inside the cathedral. And I was walking by the windows, and I saw these blobs of melted glass on the ground. And so I picked one up, and I was just looking at it and thinking of that tragedy and how long that glass had been there undisturbed. And all of a sudden, I saw a human bone embedded in the glass. And I dropped it and ran from the place. It was so eerie. And the most beautiful part of the Hiroshima ceremony is in the evening when everyone goes to the river and they float the candles lit inside paper bags or decorated bags that float on the water. And those represent the souls of the people who died in the Hiroshima bombing.
I find this day and age we appreciate things of significance far less. I mean, in our daily society, everything that doesn't have significance seems to be the most promoted. I mean, go onto YouTube and have a look at, say, Lady Gaga's newest song, 20, 40 million hits, and then you go and have a look at, say, the Obama deception or something. It's like 1, 2, 3 million hits, and you think to yourself, oh my goodness, how bad is this? But the minority understanding, is according to the founding fathers, is the jump point, more or less, where you can start to encourage other people to want to be informed, to want to get the information out to others, to really do their own research. And this is what I believe our responsibility is. Once you know the truth, you kind of really have to get it out. And perhaps this is sort of a religious perspective. I'm not sure of the ramifications of the truth movement in a wider context. I just feel better informing people about the things that they don't already know. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Our special guest is Lauren Murray for the whole 2 hours, and we'll be right back with more news.
I take my anger to a place that ain't gonna get up in your face. The facts we all get, but the system fails. We got to change the way we see the problem. We're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and we'll respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tina Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where do you rather stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV contrabands. So kids
and
unity, uninformed public, then consents to a planned absurdity.
And we are back live. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio, the best little friggin' network around, apparently. joined by my special guest, Lauren Murray, who's somewhat of an expert in the fields of radiation. Speaking of which, if you'd like to call in, if you have any questions about this for Lauren, the call-in number is 1-402-237-2525. That's 1-402-237-2525. Give us a call and you can come on air and chat with us here. Lauren, welcome back. Lauren, are you there? Seem to have lost her there, but never mind. I haven't lost her.
Hello?
Oh, wait, there we go. Fantastic. Welcome
back. I wanted to tell a little story about New Zealand and the role that New Zealand played in resisting the nuclear weapons tests that the French were doing in the French Polynesian area.
By all means.
And I bet you don't know about it.
I just want to preface this by saying that, there's a big anti-nuclear kind of campaign, particularly with Greenpeace. And Greenpeace ship, the Rainbow Warrior, was blown up by two French agents. And when the country caught them, we were basically blackmailed by the French into giving them back, because about 100% of New Zealand's lamb's brains exports go directly to France.
Oh.
And France threatened to cut us off if we didn't return their agents. So we did. And guess what they did for them to punish them for all the terrible dodgy stuff that they did, blowing up stuff and killing an independent journalist? They threw them a friggin' parade.
yeah, of course. What New Zealand did, and this is a member of the New Zealand Parliament who told me this story, he was involved in it, there was a brand new prime minister, and New Zealand decided to send a warship to French Polynesia to join the resistance to the French bomb testing, because the French bomb tested until 1993. They were the last country to stop. And what happened is the prime minister was murdered, and his family never got his heart back. And the man who told me the story was followed by an American car all over anywhere he went in New Zealand, and they tried to run him off the road when he was up in the Highlands somewhere. And he had a Citroen, though, which is very low to the ground, and so he had a lower center of gravity than the big, boxy American car. So he was able to outmaneuver them and escape, get away from them. But the Americans were the ones attacking the members of the parliament in New Zealand. It was not the French right in New Zealand, I guess. But it just shows you what these deep partnerships are between countries. And the whole nuclear nightmare is just a very, very sad thing, because it has changed the genome of the entire planet. In other words, the genetic material of every living thing. And it only took, Vinny, 4.5 billion years for the genetic material to evolve to the perfect state it was in before bomb testing started.
Now, there was talk coming out about the DU radiation starting to fragment and make its way on the winds around the world. Could you tell us a little bit about this? Because apparently in Iraq now, with all the DU weaponry that was used during the First and Second Gulf Wars, now for every Iraqi child that is born, there's three that are normal and one is usually malformed, and they now are having record amounts of Siamese twins, this is attributed to the DU, apparently.
Well, the Siamese twinning, actually they call it conjoined twins now, but the Siamese twinning, I've just been studying that for a month, and you're absolutely right, there's an epidemic of it, and it most of the birth started in about 1991. But the really large numbers started after the year 2000, and even larger numbers after about 2005. And it may be increased amounts of depleted uranium, but it could be other exotic weapons they're using, because we know they used fourth generation nuclear weapons, and we believe they release neutrons, which activate non-radioactive material for a short time. And then all of the radioactivity disappears, so that no one even knows they used a nuclear device. But the health effects are there. And if you remember, the neutron bomb was developed in order to kill the population, but to leave the buildings and the infrastructure undisturbed and non-radioactive so that the armies using it or the militaries using it could move in and take over a country or an area or a region without becoming radioactive themselves. So what I did is I've been looking at the conjoined twins, and during atmospheric testing in the United States between 1957 and 1963, there were very large numbers of Siamese twins born all over the U.S. And it happened wherever the winds and the rain carried and washed out the radiation into the environment. So sometimes it would be in Texas. Sometimes it would be in upper state New York. Sometimes it would be in New Mexico. It just depended on a particular nuclear blast and then where the winds and rain carried it. So I looked at the distribution from 1990 to 2008, and guess what? The Siamese twins are being born where the monsoon patterns, seasonal patterns, rain out the radiation, the depleted uranium, and whatever else they're using, exotic weapons, into the environment. So,
well, there's clearly a correlation, but has any causal link been found?
Oh, it's radiation, absolutely. Absolutely radiation. And there is no genetic damage to the germ cells. That is the sperm or the ovum before conception, because the DNA that is in the very first fertilized cell is the DNA that is reproduced over and over in every cell of that new organism. And when they check the male and the female, or when they check the umbilical cord DNA, there was no hereditary indication that the sperm or the ovum had genetic damage. It happened in the uterus after conception, and whatever causes twinning, they still don't know what causes twinning. There are two kinds of twinning where two individual eggs are both fertilized, and then you can get different sexes or children that look very different to each other because they're from different genetic material. But when one fertilized egg splits into two, and these conjoined twins occur, that happens between day 13 and day 17 after conception. So I can look at the birth dates of conjoined twins in Iraq, for instance, or what city they're in, or Afghanistan even, and I can go back 9 months to 13 days after they were conceived, and I can tell you what battle they were contaminated by.
Well, if it's that succinct, has there been any international inquiry into these incidents?
No. But what's interesting is that King Abdullah, who is the king of Saudi Arabia, he was the crown prince in 1990. And it's very interesting that it was the year of the first Gulf War. He set up a very special center in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia at the big hospital for conjoined twins. So I think the U.S. put him up to it, and they knew that there would be an epidemic of conjoined twins all over the Middle East and all over the monsoon regions. And he has personally paid for every surgery on every conjoined twin that have been brought to Riyadh. And as soon as he hears about them on the radio or TV or people will inform him, he immediately has the parents contacted. He invites them to bring the babies to Riyadh and the whole family, and he pays for everything, and it's at least $750,000 per surgery. And he even sends his plane to pick them up in whatever country they're in. So the areas where these conjoined twins are being born are, for instance, in Africa, South Africa, where the ocean current in the Indian Ocean carries the radioactive contaminated water right down the east side of Africa and contaminates some of those countries as well as the South Africa. But also, the monsoon pattern goes right over Somalia and Nigeria and Uganda, and so there are a lot of conjoined twins coming from that region too. Now, we're talking about no conjoined twins ever being born or reported in Iraq or in Uganda or wherever, or in Sumatra, and at the peak of very, very large increases of conjoined twins. 9 conjoined twins were born in Sumatra in 1 year.
And the likelihood of this happening by statistical coincidence would be...
Zero.
Impossible? Zero.
Impossible.
Yeah. And it's impossible to deny these things, right, when the evidence is presented, right? And has this been taken up with perhaps the UN or any of these other so-called organizations that are supposed to be regulating or supposed to be trying to do some good for the friggin' planet?
They're covering it up. They are covering up. What happened is Dr. Mahathir, the former Prime Minister of Malaysia, has invited me to 2 of his war crimes conferences in Kuala Lumpur. The first one was in 2007, and the second one was just 1 year ago in October of 2009. And he was invited because he was very impressed with the documents and videos and reports that I sent him. He had a heart attack just before the 2007 conference, and he and his wife were both medical doctors. So, Vinny, what would you do to get his attention when you know he's confined to bed and sitting there bored to death, and he's a do-it-every-day-all-the-way man? I sent him a $135 postage package of all this information, and I knew I had a captive audience.
Oh, yes. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Our captive audience will be continuing listening on, and we'll be right back with our special guest, Lorraine Murray. AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the Vinny Eastwood Show.com. Our very special guest is Lorraine Murray, who's somewhat of an expert. Very honored to have her on the show. And we've been talking about depleted uranium and conjoined twins popping up after its use. And it seems to me that depleted uranium is basically like a waste product, right? And like all waste products, the government decides that it's really, really good and decides to distill it on the population. You know, like
fluoride, for example, which is used to enrich uranium, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
You know, so what? And that's an industrial waste as well. And then they put it in the water and say it's good for your teeth. You know, what are the other products that fluoride are in? Prozac, rat poison, enriched uranium. And so also you're going to put it in your toothpaste, you know, because that fits right in there with the general scope of things, right? You know? And people, they say that, oh, well, you know, fluoride's really good for the water. I remember, you know, when I was old back in the day and everybody had really bad teeth and then our teeth got way better with fluoride. They go, really? Did you used to brush your teeth before fluoride came in? No. Did you used to have refrigerators with cheese and other things that are good for your teeth? Did you used to have access to proper fruits and vegetables and a varied diet, which is also good for your teeth back then? No. You know, pluck the one hair on the enormous head and then you'll find your solution is the general populace's sway. I'm considering that almost everything the government does has some description of really underhanded thing going on. You know what I mean, Lauren?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yes, yes, it's always for our own good. It's to improve our health. It's to protect us from disease. It's to look after us as a responsible government should. And what they're really doing is poisoning us.
It's interesting that you use the phrase responsible government, because I think that people, if they're underneath the government, they need to be responsible for themselves, because the government will just take over their lives if they're not.
Well, you know what the Manhattan Project scientist told me? He's 93 years old, and he's taught me everything I know, and he's one of the last living Manhattan Project scientists who made the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombs. He said to me, Vinny, just remember, all governments are terrorist organizations.
And if you look in the dictionary, you go to the definition of terrorism, and on the one hand, there's the conventional definition, which is to, you know, instill fear in a population in order to accomplish an aim. And the other one, terrorism is, in fact, a form of government.
That's right.
So when they tell us that Osama bin Laden in caves, or Osama bin already assassinated and dead, boogeyman, is staging the next terror attack, or if some, I don't know, CIA-created little video or audio thing, which you can barely recognize or see anything, it's probably not even the same guy, comes out, everybody just freaks out and goes, oh my God, the terrorists are going to get us. And the government's just using this whole thing as a scam, more or less. Everybody just gets real freaked out. And like everybody who gets real freaked out, they start making very poor decisions.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. The poorest of decisions.
That's right.
Is to trust what your government says.
But trust us.
At what point in history has a government ever been trustworthy?
Never.
You know, I've looked a lot through history, and it doesn't freaking occur. You know why it doesn't occur? Because if you have power, it corrupts you. Always.
Always.
You know, but personal power, on the other hand, when you're the one that's responsible for what you're doing in your life, and you don't need anybody's permission to live, mind you, and you don't need anybody's permission to pursue whatever career you want, then you can also experience a little bit of corruption, especially if you're corrupted towards serving the greater good. You know, for example, I find it difficult to not be corrupt in this day and age, because after all, I've been well corrupted by the truth movement. I can't be bribed anymore. It really sucks. I really, really wish I could be. You know, I'm not like some gun for hire anymore. I can't go out and just sell crap products anymore. I've been totally corrupted. You know, it's impossible. Because I've been personally empowered, and I've gone out with a camera over the last 2 years and interviewed activists, other people have been so. And it turns out that when you hang out with people of a particular clique, you become a lot like them in a way. you know, self-motivated and actually getting things done, as you do, Lauren.
Yes. It's because I began to trust myself working on this issue, and then I began to trust the universe. And when you trust the universe and you're doing things for the right reason, everything comes to you. The right people come to you. The resources come to you. And you let go of anxiety and unrealistic expectations and expectations of things that aren't even real.
My thoughts on this, it's kind of like you pull into a harbor and you put a Jolly Roger up on your main mast, and then all of a sudden you get all these pirates clamoring to be a part of your crew. Similar in the truth movement, you know, if you put your 9/11 was an inside job t-shirt on, all of a sudden all these truthers will start noticing you. If you put up videos, you'll start to connect with people. And all you got to do is take that first step and reveal yourself and realize who you truly are, a free-thinking individual that is incredibly powerful and will not be a slave. You're listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show with Will, and we'll be right back with our special guest, Lauren Murray. Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show. 1-402-237-2525. That's 1-402-237-2525 is the number to call. Here with my special guest, Lauren Murray, in this very short little segment here. And Lauren, you're also an expert in a number of other fields, not just radiation. Is that correct?
Yes. I've worked extensively on HARP. The newest weapon of mass destruction, the history of it, where it was developed, how it was developed, who is benefiting. That's a very, very interesting topic. And I've been doing a lot of interviews on different HARP events, such as the Haiti earthquake, the Kashmir earthquake. There were actually two. The Sumatra earthquake, the Myanmar cyclone. This is called tectonic and weather warfare, as well as mind control. And believe it or not, truth is stranger than fiction. Fiction, after all, has to make sense. That's what Mark Twain said. The United States and the Soviet Union secretly co-developed HARP under the cover of missile defense Star Wars during the Cold War.
How sneaky of them.
How sneaky of them, exactly. And so it's what more and more people are realizing now. You know, you may think that it's difficult to wake people up. You may think that not enough people are informed. You may think that people don't care, but the reality is that more people are more aware of the real forces that are structuring the history and the policies that are happening in governments around the world. More people are informed now than ever before in the history of civilization.
I believe it. Lots of polls that have been conducted over the United States of approximately 25-30% of the population believes that the government had some kind of a hand in it. Most people don't believe the official story at all. A lot of
9/11?
Yeah.
Yeah. Over 50% of Americans now believe that.
And, you know, it's true testament. I mean, I remember listening to, I think it might have been Jeff Wren's show, which you're a regular guest on, I believe.
Yeah.
And he was talking to, I think it was Gerald Celente or Bob Chapman, about the Federal Reserve. And he said, okay, well, as most of your listeners know, the Federal Reserve is a private institution. And then he stopped for a second and said, whoa, hold on a second, that's actually quite a big milestone there, you know, to be able to say that most people know that the Federal Reserve is private is like one of these big achievements, you know, something so simple to put into the public consciousness and so difficult, right, to actually get to the point where there is general public awareness. And I think that's what this show and American Freedom Radio and the Truth Movement in general is really trying to do, is put all these covered up unknowns into the light of day so that they will wither and die the way they deserve to, the way that they've been trying to do the exact same thing to all of our economies and all of our governments. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. My very special guest is Lauren Moray, and we're going to be getting into a little bit more after the break. There's nowhere to run to, baby. That's why they call it a new world order. And interestingly enough, I watched the documentary about the about the moon landing being faked. And, mate, it's so clear-cut when you actually see the evidence. It's like, mate, you can't go to the moon, okay? You'd be boiled alive by radiation, mate. It's friggin' impossible.
Vinny, I've interviewed three astronauts.
Oh, yes?
And Brian O'Leary was one of them, and I said, you know, did we really go to the moon? He said, are you kidding? He said, that's like trying to fly a beer can to the moon.
Yeah, and what most people don't know is that there's these two big radiation belts that come off the edges of the planet that basically fry any life. You'd need to be protected by at least 6 feet of lead in all directions in
That's
order to
right.
possibly make it safely through there. And I'd scarcely think that a Coke can thickness lander would be able to protect the astronauts and bring them safely back. And also, if you've ever seen like a really bad sci-fi movie or something like that, that's what the effects look like, you know?
Yeah.
Of the lander coming back up. There's not even any exhaust coming out of the thing. There's just this poof and a little bit of...
Yeah, they didn't fly to the moon. It's the radiation belts just would have absolutely fried them. And even the astronauts that go up to the space station have cancer and illnesses from their journeys up there. And even airplane crews have higher rates of cancer. And
that's right.
They're still in our atmosphere.
Yeah, a friend of mine was telling me that he went on board a plane flying from New Zealand to L.A. one time, and he brought a Geiger counter with him. And he flicked it on when they were at cruising altitude, and it was just peaking right up, you know. And I thought to myself, well, mate, that's not good really, is it? Because if everybody's being dosed with radiation the whole way around, as soon as you're trying to get higher and higher and higher, the more and more closer you get to death, it seems like.
Yeah.
And you know, they're still talking about all this obsessive stuff with space. And I was watching Russia Today yesterday, talking about the space station and just how much of an obscene expense it is for virtually no benefit.
Oh, it's all to weaponize space. It's all for weaponizing space. They have a whole satellite system that is infrared. It's I think it's called the Pentium system. And do you know what information, how information is passed through our bodies from cell to cell and how the brain functions? It's on infrared wavelengths of light because chemical reactions could never happen fast enough. And then there's a whole set of satellites that have lasers in them. They have completely weaponized space. But the solution, and an astronaut told me this, is to just send a rocket full of gravel up there, and once that gravel is released, everything's moving at like 80,000 miles a minute, it turns into satellites breaking up and ricocheting off each other, and it would destroy all the satellites in space. Just one rocket of gravel.
Hey, simpler solutions have been proposed before, haven't they? You know, it's almost like such complicated problems often have really simple solutions. You ever found that?
Absolutely, and I've simplified my life. I've simplified solutions, and everything you need is right around you if you could see it. If you could utilize what is there already, nobody would be in need. And, Vinny, I'm going to tell you what Western civilization has stolen from us. I went to Burma or Myanmar 1 year ago because I wanted to visit countries that had been British colonies to see what their state in post-colonial times, which is now, what their state of their living standard and their state of living and government and so forth health. And so I went to Sri Lanka, Malaysia, Thailand, of course, was not a colony. It was always under a king, and Burma or Myanmar. And when I flew in over Burma, it was an incredible state of paradise because they are still organized the way they were 10,000 years ago. And they are groups of villages that communicate with each other and collaborate and cooperate. But everybody gets up every morning in each village. They walk out into the fields. They harvest the rice. They pick the vegetables and the fruits. And they have a very, very, very democratic state of being because in the village, everybody shares everything.
It sounds very similar to the democracy of the Iroquois Nation, Native Americans.
That's right, indigenous people. And the Native Americans, I work a lot with them. I started an organization, Scientists for Indigenous People, to help them with radiation issues. And the Native Americans, this is before the white man came and messed it all up, but the women had the final say in decisions. And I asked a Western Shoshone spiritual leader, Corbin Harney, who stopped atmospheric testing in 1993. He stopped underground testing at the Nevada test site. He and Thomas Banyakya, who was a Hopi. And I said, Corbin, how did your tribe make their decisions, major decisions and even minor ones, before the white men came to North America? He said, well, the tribe would gather and they would discuss what the issue was or the problem was, and the men would go off in one direction and the women would go off in the other direction, and each group would come to a consensus. The men would come and report to the women, and then the women made the final decision. And it's because the women had the responsibility of the children and a vested interest in making very good decisions.
Yeah. And what I've found is in government or in family units in particular, which I believe are kind of like a model for government, you know, you've got to have everybody sort of working together with both the masculine and the feminine fulfilling both of their roles. And it's real funny, right? The government doesn't work that way anymore, really, does it?
No, it's a dictatorship.
I think it was like a Chief Sitting Bull. He said, before the white man came, we would go out and go fishing all day, and the women would take care of the kids, and then we would come back, we would feast, and then we would make love all night. Only a white man would be stupid enough to think he can improve on that.
That's great. Well, when I was in Myanmar, I always talked to everybody. I love that. The ordinary people, they're wonderful. And because Myanmar or Burma was a British colony, many speak English. And so I was talking to a rickshaw driver. And so he had a bicycle that was a rickshaw, and I sat on the back of it with all my bundles of stuff that I'd bought in the market. And we were talking, and I said, gosh, there's all this cheap, you know, Chinese clothing for sale everywhere. And it's really hot in this equatorial climate. You need natural fibers. And he said, yeah, well, we're wearing that now. He didn't like it either. But he said, before the British arrived, we wore silk.
Oh, the wonders of colonialism.
Awesome. And, of course, they did wear silk, and they wore rubies, and they wore beautiful spinels. And, you know, the reason the Indians and the people of Southeast Asia had these very ornate religious ceremonies and wore these beautiful jewels and silk and everything, it was to honor the gods. It was to honor the gods when they were having rituals to praise them and to pray to them. And so it was kings and people putting on their best to honor God when they communicated with the God body. So, of course, the reason Sri Lanka or Ceylon and Malaysia and Burma were overtaken by the British and colonized, it was for the gem mines. I went to the gem mines in Sri Lanka and Burma. They're 5,000 years old, at least. And when I was in Burma, very few people are educated there. But what I noticed is that when I talked to people, they had a knowledge base that was over 5,000 years old, of highly evolved civil society. And they didn't need to go to college. They didn't need to go to high school. They were born knowing what they know. Very intelligent people.
It's just a little bit of discernment is all you really need in life, right? Being able to distinguish the truth from a lie is the key to knowledge, because what I find is that a lot of people, particularly educated individuals, wind up getting their hands on a lot of this propaganda that they think is knowledge.
Yes.
I think that through gaining knowledge, they gain wisdom. Well, actually, it's the other way around. It's when you've got wisdom that you gain knowledge.
And the way you get wisdom and gain knowledge is to want to. And I'm going to go back to this huge foreclosure scam in the United States and the mortgage crisis that was all engineered to just completely steal the accumulated wealth of a whole generation of Americans. And then the Bear Stearns and Goldman Sachs, who are owned by the Rothschilds, have been doing this for centuries, country after country, generation after generation. Now, what happened is when people started losing their homes through the foreclosure scam, it electrified Americans like with an electrified cattle prod. You know those cattle prods that have the batteries in them and you poke them in the rear end of a cow and they suddenly leap forward?
Oh, yeah, we should use them in Parliament.
You should use them in Parliament. But what happened is this foreclosure scam operated the same way on Americans, and that's why Americans are so interested now in the Federal Reserve and how the government really works and the takeover of the corporations, because they have a vested interest now in knowing why that happened. And
yeah,
what?
And a recent New Zealand article says that New Zealand's probably in trouble as a fresh financial disaster comes out of this of these mortgage crises. You know,
Yeah. It's
like it's crisis after frigging crisis,
Yeah. And
we're being kept like in this paralyzed state of fear. You know, it's ridiculous. And I also wanted to talk about the takeover. You know, the world government, the new world order, because in New Zealand we've got this badass Agenda 21 program being implemented in the
Auckland. That's the UN, and guess who's in charge of it?
Prince Charles.
It's a global land grab. And guess who was standing on a levee in New Orleans 5 days after the Katrina disaster?
Prince Charles
was standing on a levee in New Orleans surveying his realm in his Scottish kilt, with that horrible, ugly Rottweiler he married standing next to him. And what was he doing there? And what was Queen Elizabeth doing at the World Trade Center and the UN? And what my answer is, criminals always love to visit the scene of their crimes.
Yeah, straight up. And it seems to me that the biggest criminals are the ones with the biggest names in the public view, right? But they don't have the names in the public view because of the fact that they're criminals. They have it because of the fact that they're very famous and very wealthy and very well-to-do, etc., etc. You know, this big friggin' facade. So that if anybody comes along and says, hey, they're a war criminal, hey... They're evil banking scumbags. Hey, they're stealing your land. Everyone just goes, what? I've been told to the contrary many, many times and never researched into it. That can't be true.
It's such a con game.
Yeah,
we're so brainwashed to respect authority figures when they're poison pills. They're smallpox blankets that are given to us, telling us they're our leaders and they're good for us and they're good for the economy, just like Obama. Obama's mother was CIA. Obama is CIA. Obama's father, African father, was CIA. Obama's Indonesian stepfather was CIA. And Obama's grandmother and grandfather on his mother's side were CIA. All CIA. It's CIA storefronts wherever you look. The NGOs, the presidents, the politicians, the bankers. It's all CIA. The military. It's all CIA.
Yeah. And in Auckland now, we've got our local government minister, who's like a well-to-do, you know, I don't like the big government getting in anybody's lives. I don't like dictatorship. I prefer personal responsibility. Saying, hey, all you people that have all been elected, I'm going to throw you all out. Hey,
yeah.
And all those massive districts and everything like that that have relative autonomy and contact with your constituents, I'm going to amalgamate you into one enormous thing called a super city, which is modeled on Agenda 21.
And
the best part about it is 75% of all the costs running through this big new super city tax machine will be run by unelected corporate boards called council-controlled organizations. Must have been a Freudian slip there.
to
run the super city and all the services. And this is all part of a big-ass plan through Agenda 21. What was the excuse that they're given? Oh, yeah, it's an eco-city.
Yeah, right. It's an evil city. And the Agenda 21, listen, that's UN. That's United Nations. And do you know what else they're doing? A global survey of all animals, all fish, all living things, and I'll tell you why when we come back.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Our very special guest is Lorraine Murray, and we'll be back in a wee moment. Monkey wrench in the new world order. And I hope you like jamming too. Welcome back. Lauren, you're about to get into something before we go on before we went into break. Could you please continue?
I can't remember what I was talking about.
I think we were talking about Agenda 21 or something.
Yeah. What they're doing from satellites is a global, and probably HAARP also, they're doing a global inventory of all species, the number of individuals in every population. This is fish populations in the ocean. And the way I had read about it, but then what I noticed over the last 2 years is that they are suddenly announcing the discovery of all these new species, and it seems like the survey is on a grid pattern around the planet. And so this is part of the Agenda 21 assessment or survey of all living things. Now, when we get further into Agenda 21, the purpose is that every person, by their DNA, which is our DNA is a transmitter and a receiver. In other words, it has a unique frequency that is different for each person. And they can track us from satellites by our DNA frequency, and no one will be allowed to take any more out of the system than what they put in. This is in terms of energy, food, resources, whatever. It's a zero-sum game, and it's exactly what they've been doing all this time to strip the wealth from every generation systematically, country after country.
Yeah. I mean, it's a total global agenda, and the end game here basically is just, well, total enslavement. You know,
it's total enslavement.
You won't be able to go anywhere unless you've been given permission. You won't be able to eat.
That's right.
Or anything unless you've been given permission, and you'll only be given permission as if you're an unthinking, very easy to going slave.
Yeah. Now let me tell you who the most evil person on this planet is. I have a book called "Who Owns the World: The Hidden Facts Behind Land Ownership." And it is written by a Sandhurst graduate in Britain, Kevin Cahill, who works in the House of Lords. He wrote this 2-inch thick book. And he has a list of the 26 largest individual landowners on Earth. They own 21% of the planet. And the top ownership is held by Queen Elizabeth II of the UK, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and 28 other countries and territories, which belong to her because she is a sovereign queen. So if you considered all of those countries, which she actually owns, she has a legal claim on 6,698,146,531 acres. And she owns the mineral rights to all of those acres. In other words, when you buy property in New Zealand or Australia or Canada or her other territories, you only buy the top 12 inches of dirt. She owns from 12 inches below the surface all the way to the core of the earth. And she is worth, she is worth $33,490,732,655,000.
And supposedly, she still needs to then dip into the poor people's fund to heat her palaces.
Listen, yeah, she wanted to get into the poor people's fund to pay for the heat in the winter for her palaces. That's right. And she canceled. Oh, Vinny, we won't be able to go to her Christmas party this year. She canceled it to save $80,000. And do you know what a mining expert told me who worked in her platinum mine in England, her platinum factory in England? He said, Loren, I've met Queen Elizabeth privately 5 times to talk about mining and her platinum operation. He said, she's a pretty smart old lady, but he said, she is so rich, she could bulldoze the British Isles into the ocean, and it wouldn't even make a dent in her fortune. She wouldn't even notice.
It's almost as if there's some description of big BS campaign going on so that everybody should pity the monarchs, you know, like, oh, you know, they live in these old decrepit palaces. And,
no, they don't.
these poorly these poorly maintained rural estates. It's just a big freaking con. I mean, come on, how do these people get in there in the first place? Apparently, Parliament picks the monarch that gets to rule as well. I was speaking to a constitutional researcher from Australia on the show a while ago, and that's what he's. That's what he's thinking, is that the succession of monarchs is not necessarily the next in line.
Uh-huh.
So whoever Parliament finds is most convenient.
Mm. Well, she is a Plantagenet. She is the family that has ruled England secretly more recently, but in the very long past, they ruled England for 500 or 1,000 years. They stopped using their name, the Plantagenet name, in 1900. But guess what, There are 47 of them who are in the House of Lords. So who do you think is running England? It's the Plantagenets. Now,
yeah, and this is the this is what happens with these ruling families, you know, like Red Shield became Rothschild and all of this kind of stuff.
Yes.
As soon as people figure out which families are in control, the families just change their names, and then everybody forgets about them.
Yeah, they just change their names. Now, listen to this. This is a pie chart of ownership of the planet in this book, Who Owns the World? I just mentioned that 21% of the planet are owned by 26 people, and they're crown princes and kings and sheikhs, and a lot of them are in the Middle East, or some of them are in Southeast Asia. Now, 37.5% of the planet is owned by 147 governments or states. 41.5% of the planet, that's what's left, is owned by 1% or less of the planet's population. Vinny, 85% of the planet's population owns nothing at all. Now, those are the people who are going out and working from dawn to dark every single day for their entire lives. What happened to their money? What happened to their fortune? It is stripped every generation. Do you know what the Emperor of Japan did in World War II? He systematically stripped the accumulated wealth over a 5,000-year period from Korea, from China, and from all over Southeast Asia. Do you know how much he must have stolen? he stuffed it under his imperial palace. And when the U.S. put an embargo around Japan, he sent it on Red Cross ships, hospital ships, to the Philippines, where it was buried in something like 87 or 97 underground secretly constructed caves. And when the caves had been built and hidden very, very well in the jungle and different places, the crown prince called, he sent his Japanese princes to all the countries that he was looting to make sure they got all the best stuff for him. So the one in the Philippines who was supervising all these underground construction sites where they hid all the treasure, he called all of the engineers, it was 87 engineers, who constructed these sites into one of them, and they had a huge party to celebrate the finish of this construction project. And the gold bars were piled all the way to the ceiling, and there were golden Buddhas. You unscrewed the head, and the bodies were full of jewels, diamonds and rubies and emeralds and everything. And at midnight, he took his young Filipino driver, and they walked to the entrance of the cave while all the engineers were drunk and hanging on each other and singing songs. And he blew up the entrance to the cave, and the engineers died. And the driver, this young driver, took him to the beach. He got into a Japanese submarine with maps of all of the caves, and he went back to Japan. And some of that money was found by President Marcos, but Colonel Lonsdale, who was a CIA operative for the U.S. in Japan, and General MacArthur found much more of it, and they went to have a meeting with your favorite President Truman and said, what are we going to do with all this money? It was trillions of dollars, Vinny. And they decided, instead of telling the public about it and giving it back to the countries it belonged to, they said, oh, we'll keep it and we'll make two funds. One is a fund for Japan, post-war Japan, to put all of the war criminals in charge of the government, in charge of elections, and for them to form the political parties and the parliament. And the other huge fund was to defeat democratically elected governments for centuries in the future. And the first one was Mossadegh of Iran, who was democratically elected, and they put the Shah back in to be a dictator, a tyrant. And systematically, in country after country that have elected democratic governments, including the United States, they have destroyed every one of those democratically elected governments and replaced them with tyrants.
Dictatorship is the name of the game, and that's what New Zealand's political system has been described of as a prime ministerial dictatorship. Every 3 years we have an election, and the prime minister gets to appoint directly all the people in cabinet, you know, that control all the important portfolios. And they can run through any law conceivably within a day and pass it because there's only one House of Parliament.
Oh.
And to my mind, this does not separate any powers whatsoever. And the assertion that New Zealand is a prime ministerial dictatorship, an elected 3-year dictatorship, is spot on.
Yeah. How sad.
And it's not exactly an isolated instance, is it? You know, there's nothing but corruption if you look at the governments of any country. You know,
that's
the cool thing about this show. You know, being from New Zealand and broadcasting in the United States and around the world, the listeners still get it anyway because it's the same system that's
everywhere,
messing
it's
with all of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you know about the Sarkozy scandal that's been going on all summer? Liliane Bettencourt is the richest French woman, and she is the heiress to the L'Oréal fortune. L'Oréal is beauty and cosmetic and hair products. And her father started it, and she married his best friend. And when we come back, I'll tell you the rest.
Indeed. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio. Go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and when we come back, our special guest will tell us more. The way is going to be. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Even though it might be a cold day or a dark night, doesn't matter. You're still alive. Best start living it like you are, all right? Wake up out there, for F's sake. My special guest has been, ridiculously informative, to put it mildly.
Are you calling me the skunk at the garden party?
Oh, no. I don't even know what that expression means. Anyway. Well, we've got a final segment here, ladies and gentlemen, our last chance with Lorraine Murray. If you wanted to give a quick call in, the number is 402-237-2525. Dial 1 before the 402-237-2525. You'd like to have a very, very quick chat with us. But beyond that, I'm kind of thinking about the architecture of the system itself. Where is it? Where are the chinks in its armor, in your opinion?
Well, this was revealed this summer when Liliane Bettencourt, she's 87 or 88 years old, she had been giving huge amounts of money, over $1 billion, to this society photographer who had been bullying and dominating and conning her. And this all happened after her husband died, who could no longer protect her. But her daughter sued and asked the court to appoint a guardian because she was being taken advantage of by this man. And what happened is the butler had been taping private and confidential discussion she'd been having over a two-year period with her legal advisors, her financial advisors, and other issues like politicians. And the butler gave all the tapes to the daughter. The daughter gave them to the police and a set to Mediaport, which was a new internet website that was run by former top editors of all the top newspapers in France. They'd all gotten fired by Sarkozy because they had been printing photographs of his wife with her lover and things like that. And so poor Sarkozy, paybacks are a bitch. Because yes, what happened is those editors... Sorry?
And we actually have a caller here. If you are the caller, speak on up. Welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Hello.
Are you there, caller?
No win.
Oh, well, anyway, the editors got together and did what?
So the butler gave all the tapes to this woman's daughter, Liliane's daughter, and to fired editors that Sarkozy had gotten removed from their jobs. And so they put these tapes all over the internet. They got into all the mainstream papers, and it has almost toppled Sarkozy's government, because what was revealed is that she gave envelopes full of thousands of dollars every Friday from her home to the politicians that she wanted in office in France. And Sarkozy was one of them.
And would this be by chance, in addition to the cuts that are being made, is this one of the reasons why there's such an enormous uprising in France at the moment?
Yes, the Butler tapes went on into the public venue just in time, and what it proved was that Sarkozy was, first of all, he's a Mossad agent, and also he's an Israeli agent, but it proved that very wealthy people were behind him being in office, so he would be representing their interests and not the interest of the French public.
Now, in the interest of our caller who's just been waiting patiently on the line, you've got a quick little bit to talk to Lauren. Welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Caller, are you there? You can speak now.
I can't hear him.
No, we can't. We can't hear nothing. Oh well, unfortunate. Oh well, you had your chance, and
so
blown.
So to go on.
Anyway,
to go on.
Thank you, Lauren, for coming on the show with us. Today's been a relatively interesting one. I mean, we've gone from depleted uranium to conjoined twins to HAARP technology to the moon not being able to be landed on, and also, incidentally, Agenda 21 and the banished treasures of the, what was it, the Ming Dynasty. So
But now let's just finish the Lilian Betancourt scandal, because about 2 weeks ago, just before the elections in the U.S., Obama got really, really angry at the Republicans, and he said they are getting their money from foreign interests in London. And what he meant was the Rothschilds. And so what has happened is that the City of London, powerful interests, this goes much past the Rothschilds to much higher levels, they are controlling governments even down to the city level through the Chambers of Commerce, and they are funneling money to the politicians they want elected who will carry out their best interests in country after country.
Yep, and it'd probably be why Barack H.O. Barry Satoru himself,
Mr. CIA,
got twice as much donation money as John McCain did from the same people. Thank you very much, Lauren, for coming on the show.
It was wonderful, Vinny, and Norman Kirk was the Prime Minister in 1972.
Mm-mm-mm. And do you have a website, just quickly?
The French Polynesia.
Goodbye, ladies and gentlemen. Be back tomorrow.